Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. On this September the 15th, 2008, on the West Coast, and it's already to the 16th of September, 2008, on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. Before we bring tonight's guest on board, I just want to mention that we've got some great shows lined up throughout the rest of the month, actually, as hopefully we do every week. Tomorrow evening I have my publishers and editors from the Idaho Observer, Mr. Don Harkins and Ingrid Castle, on as special guests. And we're going to be discussing some current events and, of course, the new piece that some of you know came out in this week's Idaho Observer, I should say this month's Idaho Observer. The 17th, which is Wednesday, I've got coming back Mr. Jim Mars, the wonderful author, investigative journalist of great world renown, actually. He's much loved and has been not too long ago on this show, as well as at the Conspiracy Conference, which is talking about all the things that we generally talk about on this show. I've been able to watch some of the speakers there who have been describing in great detail all the secret plans that are underway to undermine our health and our safety and our national sovereignty. Speakers like Dr. Bill Deagle, Richard Dolan, Jim Fetzer, Cliff Carnicom, and Joyce Riley, just a host or a bevy of great, great talk show hosts and researchers. And I found it very informative, very interesting. They're also talking about solutions. One individual, Sean David Morton, actually had some really, really positive things to add to the mix. And so I'm going to be trying even to get some of those people on. Dr. Deagle is scheduled next week to appear on Evident Footprints. And the man is a wealth of information about science, biomedicine, and the human body, and just everything you can imagine. And he's also somewhat prophetic and very Bible-oriented in his approach to comparing what's going on according to how it's been prophesied in Scripture. By popular request, Billy Woodard is going to be back on Thursday talking about the hollow earth and what it's like to be abducted and sharing a spiritual message with us. So I hope to delve much deeper into that topic. And then on Friday, our science advisor, Mr. Jim Murray, and I will be discussing Lord knows what. We've been on water, and I think we're going to continue talking about water. So, lots to look forward. Hope you tune in to the show. I'm going to be on a few other radio shows during the day. Tomorrow evening, I'm on a show in Colorado, and I'm hoping to have the information posted to my site. It'll be a two-hour show. I'm also going to be on We the People Radio Network on Wednesday afternoon, and that is at 2 o'clock Central Time, from 2 to 4 Central Time, on We the People Radio Network, on The American Awakening with Michael Herzog. And we're going to be talking about this research that has finally been published, and this is the story, part number 3 of The Three Stooges Go to Washington, featuring none other than Barack Obama. And I'll tell you, after the 3.5, almost 4 months of research that went into that, I can tell you that is just insane. The puzzle pieces have been thrown out of their original box and scattered on the floor, and it's really like putting a jigsaw puzzle together to figure out what's going on in that clan. But with that, we may talk about that a bit tonight with tonight's guest. He is himself an excellent, very experienced investigative journalist. He's a metaphysical scientist, a researcher. He even builds orgone devices and is quite knowledgeable in a lot of different areas, especially in metaphysics and mind control, the secret societies, you name it. He's an all-around man. He's been on Evident Footprints before. I have to say his archives are probably the most popular out of every guest I've had on the show, and he's a dear friend, very close. We work together on a number of issues, and that's to bring the message to you as close to the truth as we possibly can come. And his name is Ken Adachi. Welcome, Ken, to Evident Footprints. Well, have we lost our guest now?
Okay.
Oh, there he is. Okay, Ken, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you. Thanks again for having me on, Ben.
I hope I didn't put you to sleep with that introduction.
No, that's fine. I'm sure, you know, it's a good idea to let listeners know what shows you're going to be on, et cetera, because you're really doing great stuff these days, and you're on a roll, as they say. So this is your time.
Well, you had a chance to take a peek at the article, and admittedly, there's a lot of information there. What's your gut feeling so far? And you've read half, of course. I didn't mention the listening audience that we just published the first half to the web and to the newspaper. It takes up 5 pages of a newspaper, so you can imagine it's quite a large piece.
Yep, I just finished reading it just shortly before we got on the phone, and it's a tremendous read. Of course, you've been talking with me about it all along, so I was familiar with many areas of it, but there was some additional areas that I had not known about that we didn't talk on the phone about. So it's a heck of a story, and if enough people read it and if it gets circulated enough, it has the potential of being a real bombshell of an exposé, because what you've been searching for a few months now is you've been looking into Barack Obama's true genealogical background, and it doesn't match the official cover story that the Obama camp has been putting out about who his parents were, are, and where he was in fact born, where he went to school, where his mother went to school, etc. It's quite an elaborate tale of cover-up, of deceit, to try to paint him as an all-American boy from the heartland of America. And because you've just working from the internet, just working with search engines, etc., you've dug into the details and you've been able to find out what other people should take the time to explore as well. If you have access to the internet, they can do what you've done. They can start looking and comparing the newspaper accounts of what he claims, of what his biographers claim, etc. And then you actually check the numbers. You notice dates do not match, years do not match. There's an unreasonable absence of photos or accounting for people's presence. They claim they lived in this location or that location for so many years, yet there's no photos to corroborate that. There's no testimony. There's no witnesses to corroborate that. There's a lot of holes in the official Obama family story, a lot of huge holes. And you've done a very good job of poking your finger through many of those holes and spreading it wider. people need to read that article very, very carefully, because there's a lot of detail there. There's a lot of information that to be absorbed.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are some things, Ken, that are everyday, commonplace issues in anyone's life. You know, if you ask someone where they're born,
they can
tell you. They can produce a valid birth certificate.
Exactly.
You can find people in the town that say, "Oh yeah, I remember him when he was growing up. I remember
of
what
course.
He did in school. They played
Who
football."
Who doesn't have exactly a long album, really a photo album? Who's not taking photos in the 20th and the 21st century? Every family takes photos. You know, when you first attend grade school, or you go to kindergarten. Anybody who's born in America and raised in America has a photo album that shows them from babyhood forward. You're in, you're out. The poorest families have photos of their kids as they're growing up. This guy doesn't have that. This guy has these occasional photos as a young toddler, and then he's 10 years old, and then the next thing he's bury somebody at 17 or 18 years old. There's huge gaps in this guy's photo albums. There's a reason for that.
Oh, yeah. It'll identify who he is. That's pretty simple. You know, the media keeps re-chanting this mantra of the church he belonged to for 20 years, the church he belonged to, the church he went to for 20 years. It's been 20 years since he's been at this church in Chicago. And we're not to 2012 yet. He joined the church in 1992.
Right. Just that's exactly. That's what you're doing. You're taking newspaper accounts. He claims he joined in 92. Well, 20 years from 92 is 2012. Why are his people saying he's been with the church for 20 years when it's only 15 years?
Yeah, and he quit several months ago, too. Because of a scandal going on there, the media is conveniently left out. Now, that's in part four. I go into great detail in that. But I just bring up this issue about the church because it's like his proclamations of how old his mother was when his mother died. He didn't have that number straight, and I've still yet to hear it from him.
Yes.
Out of his mouth.
Why don't you review the facts of when was she born, when did they claim she died, and give us more... The more
salient
mathematically
points.
Correct version.
Well, they say she was born November 29th of 1942. Now, I have a problem with that in that who would be the father? If her father was in the military, there's a good chance in war that he wasn't at home making babies. If that story is even true. You see, there were just... there are so many things that are difficult to prove. They take a picture of him in a military shirt with a tie and some medals posted on his chest. And that's supposed to be acknowledgement that he was in the military? I mean, you or I could do that. I wasn't in the military. I had a draft number that was you know, pretty low. Nixon resigned before he got to my number. I would have gone if I had to go, but I made it through the draft and didn't get picked. A lot of people through life have been through that. Now, do I think it's negative or positive whether or not I went to the military? It really doesn't matter. But the point here is that they created an image of someone that went to the military. We don't know, but if I look at when Stanley Ann, his mother, was born, who's the father? He's supposed to be overseas in Europe. You know, it just doesn't add up. Now, it's quite possible that he is the father, and they're not Americans. You know, because they're in Kansas. You know, I remember Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. Wasn't she in Kansas?
Yes.
Okay? I mean, remember that, because this is like a Wizard of Oz story.
Yes.
So... You know, I didn't put that in the article. I probably should have, but it's certainly something I can talk about.
Yeah,
on the show.
Yeah, it's typical of the Illuminati, and they tend to play games with words and drop double entendre hints in the course of their, you know, their fabrications, their cover story fabrications. In fact, it's very common for them to do that. They,
mm-hmm.
they like to play games with the general public so that they're, to people who are in the know, who are adepts, or on the inside, they see the coded message coming through while the general population, it's going right over their head. So you might have a point there about the very use of the word Kansas, because as you probably know, one of the mind control, CIA developed mind control programs was called the Wizard of Oz programming. So they actually used the original movie. Well, they did. They don't do it now, but in the earlier decades when they were doing mind control programming, the Wizard of Oz programming was used. For instance, Cisco Wheeler, that's the programming that she was used for her. They watched the movie, and they had to memorize long passages of the movie, and because they, when they're triggered into a hypnotic trance, when they want to go and have them go into an altar, or when they want to access their subconscious mind, they use trigger words to get them to go from personality A to personality B, or to have them go into an entranced state. And then when they're in that state, they can talk to them, and they can get direct access to information in their subconscious mind. It's just like a computer. They just, spit out whatever they're triggered to reveal. And one of the ways they use them is that they use this symbolism of going over the rainbow, see? And that, that means you're going to another state of consciousness. So there's a lot of well-known catchphrases from The Wizard of Oz.
I've got one for you. If I can do an impersonation, follow the yellow brick road.
Well, there you go. Right. And I mean, there's all kinds of...
that's
course,
the NASA superhighway today.
Yeah, right.
The yellow brick road.
The Wizard of Oz stories was not one book. It was a series of books. It was 9 or 12. I can't remember exactly. And Frank Baum was the author. And Fritz Springmeier did such a good analysis of who Baum really was. He was an occultist. He was a Satanist.
Mm-hmm.
And there was much occult information encoded in the original books. Now, for the movie, what they did is they made a compilation of all the books into a single story. But if you actually read his original books, my God, they're just loaded with occult references. I mean, and I can imagine for the period of time, the 20s and 30s, you know, that would have gone right over the public's head, except the Satanists, you know, and the occultists. They would have gotten it, but for the general public, you know, who didn't see Wizard of Oz as a kid, or who would have imagined that the original author's intention was much darker? It was kind of a play on a cult theme, much as the Potter, what's his name? What's the name? Harry Potter. Those are encoded with occult satanic messages from beginning to end. It's a mind control, it's a mind washing, it's a mind conditioning a series of films to really draw young people into the occult, into Satanism. That's really what the game's all about.
Yeah, and there's a lot of symbolism, subliminal symbolism that we run into every day of our lives, even as adults.
Yep.
You know, it controls all the controlling mechanisms of society are in the general theme of that movie. I mean, a girl hits her head in the middle of a tornado. She has a dizzy spell, passes out, and trips for several hours. You know, and they're portraying humanity in the Scarecrow, and the Tin Man, and the Lion. That's representative of all the mechanisms they use to control society right there.
Yes, right. And also the longings of the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
They use this combination of the kind of this hocus pocus, transition into never worlds, mm-hmm. and they couple that with emotion, because part of the way to hypnotize people, to brainwash people, to get them to follow an agenda that you want them to follow and to be enthusiastic about it, because this is what they're doing. They're following this pattern exactly with Christian fundamentalists of the type, evangelical type, and even more than the so-called charismatic types, the type you see featured on TBN, Trinity Broadcasting Network. These services, I guess we'll call them, are highly charged with emotions. The speaker himself is always flamboyant, loud, and very, what's the word I want to use here? Very strident, okay? Extremely forceful in his presentation. Now, some of them do it in a very loud way, like Ron Parsley is an example of a very loud, overbearing sort of guy. And other people do it in a softer voice, but it has sort of the same effect. Benny Hinn's a good example of that type. But they couple their presentation with a lot of, they want to get to the core of people's hearts, as it were, so that they can affect them the most deeply. So
it's
there's a great
theatrical.
Deal.
Yeah.
Right, it's theatrical, but the organ music, how, I've seen this often. I see this on TV, of course. I don't go to these events, but TBN's available on UHF. And I watch Hinn, I watch Robertson, I watch them all. I've made tapes of them just to study what they're doing, what the show is all about. And I see very characteristic tools that are used to essentially draw the people who are in attendance into a kind of emotional tinderbox, let's put it that way. And people are highly manipulative when you're in that state. And that's exactly what they want, because they are trying to inculcate a message into their subconscious mind. And mm-hmm. you do that. The emotions are kind of a bridge from the logical mind into the right side of the brain, where we're dealing more with the subconscious element, with things that are not with the world of symbols, etc. That's what the subconscious world is. We don't have words in the subconscious world, we have symbols, and they're using these devices. Well, same in the Wizard of Oz and movies like Harry Potter. They're kind of brainwashing people. It's a form of mind conditioning, and the millions of parents who will bring their kids to these things thinking it's good, wholesome entertainment, they're so deceived. They just don't understand how sophisticated the deception is that's being put upon them. They just don't know that the Illuminati, they are, the guy who said it best was Fritz Springmeier. They are masters of deception. That's the best way to describe them, because they've been doing this for not hundreds of years, not since Machiavelli, but for thousands of years. And they are truly masters at it. And if the average, Joe Blow thinks he can recognize Illuminati subterfuge and deception on the surface, no way. No way. You have to know how these people do this and how they draw you, and you have to know the game. Otherwise, most people are victimized by it. Most people haven't got a clue.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I came to this conclusion about Kansas in a phone conversation today, where someone asked me, how does a person get to where they are? Well, this has been a media creation. You have this one slogan. And really, it's empty. and that's change you can believe in.
Yes.
You know, there we go. We have the belief system, and you're supposed to be believing in change, but what kind of change? I mean, things are going down as fast as you can go down. They're going down faster than an elevator in free fall.
Right.
They're going down every bit as fast as the World Trade Center on 9/11.
Right.
And
well, that's a very good point you're making here.
Yeah, and
these
it dawned on me that this is nothing more than a repeat of The Wizard of Oz.
Exactly, because he certainly didn't make up that expression. That's a Tavistock-created expression. All of these campaigns use buzzwords that have been created for them by people who specialize in this type of psychological manipulation, mostly out of Tavistock in England. Then it's delivered to the Stanford research people, and then it winds up with the speech writers and so forth. These are carefully chosen phrases. I'm not telling you anything, but we're just sharing these thoughts for the sake of...
The listening audience, yeah.
For the listening, right. Every phrase they use is carefully calculated. That's why all the laws, the statutory edicts that they've passed in the last 20, 30 years, but particularly since 9/11, always have names attached to them that are usually 180 degrees opposite of their true intent. So we have the Patriot Act, which is really the Traitors Act, because everything in it is a betrayal of the Constitution and the people. But they always choose words that are a complete reversal of what the true intent is. This is characteristic of Satanists. Their whole game is reversal of everything, so that when they want to make a mockery of the Catholic Mass, for instance, they use an upside-down cross. They have something called a black mass. Everything is a 180-degree reversal of what we normally, accept a symbol as. That's characteristic of Satanists and the Illuminati. Reversal is their game. So every one of their representatives up there, from George Bush to Condoleezza Rice to Richard Cheney, etc., these people lie consistently. They never tell the truth. They're always lying. It's a 180-degree reversal from whatever the truth is. And they will accuse of created boogeymen of the very crimes that they are committing. If you listen to any of Bush's speeches since 9/11, what he's accusing Al-Qaeda of, in fact, he and the Illuminati cabal working with him are, in fact, are responsible for. Whatever they accuse you of, they themselves have done. That is also a constantly recurring theme in them. They always accuse others of the very crimes that they commit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they set up the laws and blame us for breaking the laws that they never adhere to whatsoever.
Yes,
and they create these laws, and they're violating them and drumming into us that, you break these laws, there are severe penalties, fines and imprisonment. Yet the very laws that they create are the ones that they're breaking. Somehow they're above the law.
Right.
Somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our fault. Really, we're responsible for allowing that to occur. Hopefully, these revelations and this, these genealogical backgrounds, if we can awaken to the fact that these people are not from this country, they have no business being in a role of leadership in this country, according to the laws, according to our Constitution, they'll be run out of town as soon as people awaken to that fact, and our problems will be over. Now, that doesn't mean they'll change overnight, but you get them out of the way, and they're certainly you're going to clear the path to something better than what we have right now.
Yes,
because their interests are self-serving and have nothing to do with us, regardless of what you say. That's a Leninist strategy, and Lenin himself was a Satanist.
Yes,
so
that's true.
It's the duplicity. It's telling two stories, or, you know, telling one story and doing exactly the opposite, as you well pointed out.
Yeah.
Well, in this family, you know, we could talk about Kansas, but it's not about Kansas. Kansas is the story. You know, the Wizard of Oz really wasn't about Kansas, except when Dorothy said, "There's no place like home," you know, or the what was it, the Good Witch of the North? "Tap your heels together three times and say,
yeah,
there's no place like home." You know, I mean,
of the East, I guess.
There was the Wicked Witch of the West. I don't even remember.
I think the Good Witch was the Witch of the East. But again, there's symbolism in there. The very use of the words East and West. It is loaded with symbolism.
Yeah. But, you know, the story really wasn't about Kansas. It was all about illusion.
Yes, correct.
You see, and how illusion controls society. So after I put this story together, I realized when I was talking this evening with someone that, you know, this is nothing but another Wizard of Oz story spun in a little different way. And if you think along those lines, you'll start to see parallels with it. You have to go back into the grandparents and the great-grandparents in this case, because he's a younger guy. He's, you know, he's not one of these old farts that's been in the military for 50 years that finally worked his way up through the political machine. And now they, you know, they've got the puppet where they want him. It's the bloodline. And I'm speaking about McCain there. I don't know what else to call him based on some of the things I've heard and some of the things I've learned just from the research I've done. But I'm finding out other researchers have been down this path. Even, you know, I'm going back to my McCain article. You mentioned Fritz Springmeier. He has come along and presented similar conclusions, not specifically towards McCain, but he talked about a long-standing affair between Jenny Jerome and Edward VII. Long time. It's sort of mentioned in history as a passing fancy, as one in maybe hundreds of affairs that he had. But she was the one that they used to produce their bloodline.
Right.
And I feel I hit the nail right on the head, especially after reading his work and David Icke's work. Now, I see parallels in their work, which I read after I did this research, and the Obama clan is associated with the same types, only a bit on the French side. The Payne family, which is the grandmother, the banking grandmother, was heavily involved with the Rockefellers, but one must understand who was pulling Rockefeller strings. See, we look at the Rockefellers as this big power, and I'm not saying that they're not, but there's always a front man for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rockefellers were fronts for the payseurs, which were the French paymasters. And there were two payseurs, George, who became George Bayshore when he came to the United States. He was given land in North Carolina. And then you had Daniel, who that name came about. He was the Prince Crown Crown Prince Louis of France under George III. He had him change his name to Daniel Payseur, and the two of them came to the United States and formed the Virginia Company and the New England Company.
Yes.
This is the significance of the Ivy League schools. This is the significance of the 13 colonies. And they began buying up the railroads and the shipping companies. And Rolla Payne, who was the father of Madeline Payne, who's Barack Obama's so-called grandmother that raised him, Rolla Payne worked directly for those shipping lines, for the imperial shipping lines. And he was managing oil fields for the Rockefellers in Oklahoma. They'll tell you Kansas, but his social security number was issued in Oklahoma. Now, why would somebody born and raised in Kansas go to Oklahoma to get a social security number?
Mm-hmm.
You see, so we have these anomalies. We have these conflicting stories, and the facts don't they don't match up to what they're telling in the stories, if they even talk about those things at all.
Yes.
Obama wrote about them, and you get an occasional cameo story that the Chicago Sun-Times or some other major newspaper does, but it's got more of the same spin. The 20 years at the church in Chicago, and those 20 years have not elapsed yet, and he's already left the church. You know, it's like you said, 15 years is probably a stretch. You know, that's relying on the starting date of 1992, but I can tell you that birth dates, birthplaces, the names of these people, nothing matches. You cannot find a lick of credible documentation anywhere. The guy's got a birth certificate that he submits, bogus. It's a forgery from Hawaii. There's one now they're saying that they have in Kenya. There's another one in Indonesia. And another one in Vancouver, Canada. This is a man without a country.
Yes.
And they want him to lead us? Think about this, people.
Yep.
This is insanity that we're even entertaining this.
Yeah. There's multiple criticisms, any one of which would, for an intelligent American listening to this, would wonder, you know, that there's no logical legitimacy to Obama as a candidate because, A, he's too young of a politician to begin with. His political career, insignificant, minor, short-term, and insignificant only. So he's an Illinois politician for a short period of time, relatively short period of time. He's elected to the U.S. Senate for only 2 years, and now they're projecting him to be the President of the United States. I mean, this just flies in the face of common sense. Common sense would have you assume that those with the, you know, with the longest record and enormous political popularity, among voters, and a huge track record of service in the government would be the man who we'd be looking to be the candidate for president. But no, they're following the same sort of bait and switch that they use with Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter is another one who the Illuminati decided on before it was ever announced that he was running, that, well, we're going to make Jimmy Carter the president because they looked at certain things. They looked at his military record and his role as governor, and they wanted to, let's say, hang the populist, laurels around his shoulders. So, therefore, he's the peanut farmer from Georgia. He's the good old boy. He's Jimmy Carter. He's not, President James Carter. He's Jimmy Carter. And they wanted to make him, and they're doing something similar with Palin. They're trying to, create this mom and apple pie image of her. That's how they get, we have, the populace has nothing to do, or nor do the parties really. The oligarchs, the elitists, are directing who's going to be their candidate into the, willing arms of well-paid, well-blackmailed party hierarchies, individuals, and they decide who's, and so they just, this is the guy we're going to get behind, and so they have a meeting somewhere, CFR or whatever, some often some. And they tell the people who need to know, the heads of the party and so forth, this is the guy who we're going to put up, and from then on it's just, they just fall in line, and they get their writers and their hacks and their talking heads and their mouthpieces, which I heard month after month during the primary time, particularly over KPFK or NPR, which is the only two stations on FM that I can listen to that has this sort of political talk on it. And, I just heard so many people just blather on about how wonderful Barack Obama is. I mean, as many people have noted, you know, it's, he sort of has the Messiah robes on him, you know, and the lights coming out from behind his head, and it's just insane how people just put their, you know, at least the people who bought into this, put their intelligence on low idol and just go with the flow. It's kind of the unthinking types who tune into Oprah Winfrey every day. I can't imagine a more mesmerized and easily duped group of people in this country than Oprah Winfrey fans, because it's all show and little substance. In the case of Obama, there was no substance. It's just inspirational speeches. And people don't know the difference between a candidate who's running for the most powerful position in the world and an inspirational speech by someone who's been taught, you know, neuro-linguistic programming. There are techniques, there are schools, which I'm sure Barack Obama has been put through, which teach people how to be a, quote, charismatic speaker, because they use certain words, they use certain speech patterns, they use certain inflections. This is a science. It's called neuro-linguistic programming. And they teach it. This is what Tony Robbins does. It's mm-hmm. it's a way to manipulate people's emotions to get them to nod in agreement with whatever program you're trying to have them lock into. And the bulk of the, you know, the public does not know that. They just mm-hmm. take these guys at face value. They don't know that they're listening to someone who's been trained in the art of manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you brought up an interesting point, because when I'm listening to him speak, and I'm speaking about Obama, and I heard him make a comment, my mother lived to be 57.
Yeah.
Okay, now, add 57 to 42, okay, and what number do you get? Does that come to 99?
Comes to
99, right? So if she's born in 1942 and she lives to be 57, then she should
have
lived.
She died in 1999, supposedly.
Huh? Well, no, I'm just we're just doing a little arithmetic in our
brain.
Yeah,
exactly. But I'm saying if that number matched, that means she should have died in 1999.
Yes, and she would have died after her birthday in 1999, because she was born, according to the story, November 29th. Well, she died short of her birthday in 1995, they say, on November 7th. So basically she died 22 days before her birthday, and when Barack says she would have been 57. Now, didn't he stop to calculate how old she was? I know he didn't spend a lot of time with her, but there's a reason why he didn't spend a lot of time with her, and it's likely that she was not even his mother. You see, this is also why one would not go to her funeral, because she's not his mother.
Mm-hmm.
The cremation story prohibits anyone from going to a gravesite and exhuming a body. But what is interesting now is she would have died actually at age 52, not age 53, and definitely not age 57. But the number is spun just like the church story. Mm-hmm. You see, this loose, wild and loose with the figures,
with the facts, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm looking at that and I'm saying to myself, okay, what did she die from? The story is she died from ovarian cancer. Yet his so-called stepmother, Kezia, who is from Africa, first wife of Barack Obama Sr., is living in London, and she says, I became very good friends over the years with Stanley Ann. Wait a minute. She's in London, she's in Africa, and Stanley Ann is in Indonesia and Hawaii, and she becomes great friends, and they have visits. How do they pull this off? When did they do that? Well, according to Kezia, she died of breast cancer, not ovarian cancer. So now we've got ovarian cancer, breast cancer, 57 years old, 53 years old. Well, you know, none of these figures add up. None of the stories compare to each other. someone that is like a sister and tells you they have breast cancer, but she dies of ovarian cancer, there's something wrong with that story.
Right.
Right? It's just like the birth certificate. There's something wrong with those, too. And I'll tell you, his being in Indonesia because of Lolo Satoru, his stepfather, who his mother, Stan Leanne, supposedly married after divorcing Barack Sr., he could not have been in Indonesia working for Mobil Oil Company any time before 2005. Now, this is supposedly happening in 1967, 1968. He's working for Mobil Oil there in Indonesia. Well, they were not in Indonesia until 2005.
Right.
So there's right. another...
A very important fact. What you're saying is that the cover story is that he was, an engineer for the Army, and from there he moved into a job supposedly with Mobil Oil in Indonesia in 1967.
Uh-huh.
What you're saying is that there was a national Indonesian oil company that had a monopoly on oil production
yes.
in Indonesia.
That was under the Suharto government. Yes.
Right, and they held that monopoly until 2005. After
for 56 years. 56
right.
years.
Now, so huge holes in the official story, just, figured out by someone who's just looking at the facts. Was Mobil Oil actually operating? Did they have an operation? Did they have a field representative in 1967 Indonesia? No, they didn't. So I'd like to, Joe, just take a few seconds to reflect on the fact that your story includes the notion that Barack Obama's mother or supposed mother did not in fact die. Your supposition is that her death was faked, and that there's probably, if one were to dig hard enough, there's probably not much documentation to confirm. I wonder, is there a birth certificate that's been, let's say, certified? If there is a birth certificate certified by a medical examiner or a coroner, is that person still alive? I wonder, because when I was reading that aspect of the story, it seems that the so-called memorial service after she died, very few were in attendance. I'm wondering, was her own parents in attendance at this so-called memorial service?
One would have to know who her parents were.
Right. Barack himself was not there. So there was a small group of friends. Okay, who are the friends? In the time, if she did die of cancer, what hospital was she in? Who attended to her as her health was declining? We don't know any of this information. I'm not sure that any of that exists. There's a heck of a story here that if someone were to really dig hard and look into the records and find out, well, where did she actually stay in that last year that she had cancer prior to her supposed demise? Was she in a hospital? Was she at home? If she was at home, she had to have nurses. She had to have a doctor attending. What's the name?
Mm-hmm.
There's
now,
a lot of facts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's interesting, Ken, is that I was trying to just find substantiation for when she died, and I came up with aliases.
Right.
There's a Kellyanne Dunham living with Madeline, the mother. Well, they only had this one daughter. Who the heck is Kellyanne?
Right.
And then there's a Susan Ann and a Sandra
right.
Ann and a Deborah
right.
Ann, and it just goes on and on.
Yeah, just as we found out with the Otto Skorzeny revelations, it's typical to falsify a death because it's convenient to allow these people to continue so that they're totally out of, their work, if you want to put it that way, totally out of public scrutiny, outside of public scrutiny. So it's no big deal to fake a death because the CIA has done it with most of the well-known Third Reich people associated with Skorzeny. I mean, almost to a man, they've all faked their death. Skorzeny faked his death, supposedly 75 Madrid. Mengele supposedly faked his death, supposedly he died, drowned in 79 in Brazil, and his body was uncovered in 85, untrue. Walter Rauch faked his death.
Bormann?
Bormann faked his, yeah, the Bormann thing, you know, he supposedly died in 45, you know, right outside, close to the bunker there in Germany. In fact, I got an email from a man in Germany who was personal friends with a SS tank commander who was his group was trying to break out of the Berlin bunker, and this was in early, you know, like May 1 of 1945, was surrounded by Russian troops. They were, you know, they were moving in. They wanted to, you know, access the Berlin bunker. And anyway, this was called a breakout, and Bormann, this tank commander says, was both following him just behind his tank, and also he climbed on the back of his tank. And I got a 6-page letter from this man in Germany, this tank commander had typed this up some years ago, and he's describing what he saw, and he says there's no way Bormann could have survived because he saw he saw Bormann get on his tank, and then he was thrown off at one point, and he saw the fire, you know, from the Russians were just so intense. He said no one could survive that. It was, you know, there was just a lot of people at that moment killed. So he was absolutely sure, you know, Bormann was killed. He assumed that he witnessed it. And I wrote back, this is a very friendly guy. I mean, I really appreciate the fact that he contacted me because he's opened up a lot of potential contacts for me in Germany. And what I did is I told him, I says, well, first, if it was the real Bormann, he surely survived. Because of Otto Skorzeny's photos, we have Bormann showing up in photographs in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's the same man. I did a photo comparison in the essay that I did called The Revelations of Otto Skorzeny, Part 1, Martin Bormann, and there's at least, I don't know, 18 or 20 photos there in which you can see, starting from his Nazi-era photos right up to, well, the date on the photo is 2003. It shows a much older Bormann. It's the same man, though. If you merely look at, these are all enlarged, cropped headshots. I mean, I think the average person can recognize it's the same man because he has certain characteristics to it. He has a gap between his two front teeth that's pronounced. He has, you know, the shape of his face. The spacing, you know, between his eyes, it's characteristic of him, and you can see the same man in all these shots. So,
yeah, it's the same circle of friends too. I mean, you see them progressively aging, you know, through this Nazi movement, this Operation Paperclip movement. The same ones that are originally with the Schur family, the AKA Bush family, in Nazi Germany.
Right. So what we're talking about here, it's easy and common to fake deaths. And I have had a couple people send me emails, well, that can't be because on the Discovery Channel I saw Otto Skorzeny's funeral and another guy, I took it off the internet myself. There was another guy, maybe it was Alice Brunner, I don't know, Walter Rauch. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was Walter Rauch. Some South American country, you see these two guys carrying out a casket. You're just seeing two guys carrying a casket. It doesn't mean Walter Rauch's in it. And the same at the Otto Skorzeny funeral. You didn't see Otto Skorzeny. You see them pushing around a casket. How stupid can people be to assume that that's proof that the man, you know, is in the casket? It's not proof of anything.
Well, it's the same as the story of scattering one's ashes over the Pacific. I mean, that could have been the leftover charcoal from the afternoon's luau.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and if I base that story on the other facts that I've uncovered, I'd have to say, it's another tall tale. That's all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One can only now.
Mean,
you know, the whole reason
I just want to emphasize the point, though. know, you've really come across a number of nuggets, but I think the largest gemstone you found to date is the very, very real possibility that Barack Obama's supposed mother is not dead. She's alive, and she has numerous aliases, and you've identified many of those aliases in your story, and you see her involved in high-level money laundering schemes using real estate as a way to wash the funds, to wash tracking of the funds.
Mm-hmm.
So you've made quite a coup there, Don. You know, quite a remarkable thing. I mean, we're assuming this is we don't have absolute positive proof, but we're running on the supposition that she may well still be alive.
It's a heck of a lot more believable than what the media is telling.
Yeah, the cover story is weak. It pales in comparison to the data that you have that seems to point to the fact that death was faked. That her mother certainly is an Illuminati player of fairly substantial standing, and her, because of her family background, it always goes back to the bloodline connections. Pain,
mm-hmm.
France. I mean, you know, this is typical of the Illuminati. They keep everything within the family. Just to give you a quick aside, you mention in your story, you mention the name, you know, Bryce Taylor. Well, Bryce Taylor's is the pen name that Susan Ford used in when she wrote her book, Thanks to the Memory, about her experience as a mind-control slave. She was handled by a comedian, Bob Hope. Anyway, her father's true name, Susan's Ford maiden name is Eckhart. That's German. And if you look at World War II, you'll see that a man named Dietrich Eckhart was a fairly large player with Hitler in the Third Reich. I can't remember the exact function he performed, but he was sort of he was more of a politician than a military type. But Dietrich Eckhart. Now, I haven't done this yet, but I'm going to talk to Sue, and I'd love to look into her father's family background to see where her father's Eckhart and Dietrich Eckhart, who played a big role in the rise of the Nazis, where those family names might meet. And I bet you, of course I'm guessing here, but I bet you we don't have to go back more than one or two or three generations and we're going to find the same family members.
Mm-hmm.
They always keep it in the family.
Yeah, the reason I included her information in this story was to show how someone who had a very covert yet significant role in this mind control and the sex slave business and the compromising of key people, whether they're politicians, presidents, entertainers, you know, famous people. And her name was in that database. I could not believe it, but I knew who was using the database when I found her information there. That's not something that the average person would know unless they read her book.
Right.
Okay.
Let me amplify on that to you, because people listening to this, I want to be sure that they understand. You've made many important discoveries. I'll just put a title on it. One of those discoveries you made in internet searches was that there are databases on the internet that you've tripped upon, you've happened upon, that you can see that they're serving a double purpose. They're acting as a some sort of connecting station, if you will,
mm-hmm.
between CIA operatives, so that, or let's say any, it may not just be the CIA, who knows, NSA, military intelligence, Mossad, it could be any of them. But so they, using a computer anywhere in the world, can just go to these databases and obtain information. But it's encoded in such a way, or presented in such a way, that naturally the average person who happens upon it just thinks it's a database of names or whatever. But you found connections because the names that they're using are, it seems pretty pretty apparent. They seem to be aliases, so that they'll use Susan's Ford's last name Ford. Well, one of the people she was used by was Ronald Reagan, so there's a name in the list of Ronald Ford. And, of course, she was also used by ex-President Gerald Ford, so, of course, he's in the list there as Gerald Ford. And you know, you're finding that they're playing games with the names here. Outsiders would not recognize what's going on, but insiders instantly know what's going on.
Yeah, actually, they put George R. Ford, but I see that as including both George W. Bush, or H.W. Bush, and Gerald Ford in one name.
Very
see?
Good. Right, right.
That's how I read
you
it.
Can, yeah, you can make the leap of imagination to see how they're using this kind of shorthand game here with the names to tell or relay information to those in the know, the insiders in the know. They're gleaning information from, and you kind of broke some levels of those codes, which is another important accomplishment, I think.
Well, it shows. I mean, you see, what's interesting is this hooked up, or it connected the dots to universities and laboratories and hospitals and financial trusts and things like that. I mean, who would list a trust as a relative?
Correct. Absolutely, yeah.
You see, it's obvious that if a person is not looking, you know, when you or I go looking for someone, it's because we want to see if we can contact them, usually, you know, to speak with them or to communicate with them. So,
right.
or we might be doing genuine genealogical research. You know, I'd like to see where my cousin is, if he's married, if he has a family, this or that.
Right.
But people have all kinds of reasons for putting their family history together. But what this is a family, Barack Obama, who had two fathers, and okay, one father had four wives. Okay, maybe you're going to get some relatives, but I think I counted 189 relatives and 154 addresses. Come on, who in a lifetime has 154 addresses? It's insane. I mean, it's absolute insanity. What am I supposed
Correct.
To, you know, what is anyone supposed to think of that? This is the data that comes up, 154 addresses. I mean, 54 addresses is a lot, let alone add another 100.
Yes.
you know, divide that by 47, the guy moves three times a year.
Yes, that's right.
Almost four times a year. Darn close. I mean, it's obvious what's going on here. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. It's obvious that there's an agenda to use the public information highways as a means right in front of our noses of being corrupt. Now, what I see happening here is because of the names, because there are international names involved in this. There are people in international law enforcement agencies involved in this stuff. And some of these people are used as front people. Some are diplomats. And so what they're doing is they're using identity theft, and they're using real names or fictitious names to move property to allow someone to acquire that. And as you rightfully pointed out, it's probably laundering of drug money, which is being converted into real estate, which is then being sold at bargain basement prices, and that money is going into offshore accounts. This is why we have a housing crisis.
Right.
This is one of the keys. It's not the only one, but it's one of the major keys to how they are, let's say, we're witnessing a sabotaging of our country. It's being sold out from under us secretly.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
The actual physical real estate is being sold. And then these derivatives and these hedge fund accounts that are pooling the money from all of these illegal activities are all taken offshore. This money's not in our coffers. And they're financing this with stolen money. They're stealing this money right out of the Treasury.
Yes.
Which is being made out of thin air by the Federal Reserve, and they're making us pay the bill for it, for all
yes.
the deficits.
Yes.
So we're
yes.
paying for the privilege of being robbed blind.
Oh, yes. No. This is the typical Nazi model. The Nazis, I'm using the allusion to the Nazis because it's true. The Nazis did not really lose World War II. They recovered, and they working with infiltrators and fifth colonists in our own country here. They were brought into the country to continue to expand the projects which they were working on in Nazi Germany before and during the war. And, you know, it included a lot more than just rocket science. The mind control and other illegal activities were, so they grew substantially in power. And, of course, the Bush family is the sort of the best example of that, because we know from the Scherf articles, etc., that George Bush Sr., 41st president, was not born in this country. He was apparently born in Germany, and he was infiltrated into the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why his father, which may or may not be his biological father, it's entirely possible. More than one person has indicated that
I have even.
might be the seed of Adolf Hitler himself. But anyway, the notion that the father was clearly caught collaborating with Nazi Germany during the war, and he should have been tried and thrown into prison. And certainly never to emerge again as a senator following the war, but because the infiltration is so deep and the forces are so powerful that it was just quickly swept under the rug and mm-hmm. essentially slapped on the wrist, and they got the assets back after the war. I mean, he paid no price at all for his treason, none at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, you brought up an interesting point, too, and if I can interrupt, because I want to draw some analogies here. You have seen a photo of George H.W. Bush the day before his plane crashed, and you have actually done a whole article on the anomalies that appear in that photograph.
Right.
Despite anyone thinks about the appearance of entities in a photo, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's compelling what is in that one shot. Now,
yes.
We have a similar picture from Barack Obama, a picture that has been made to look like it's an antique black and white picture. You know which one
yes.
I'm speaking about.
Yes.
Without going into the specific details of what's in that photo, you do know that that was a color photo.
Yes,
you've seen
right.
that. I've shown you that.
But it was desaturated to make to make it look as if it was originally black and white.
Yes, and not only that, but it was hiding some things that are very visible in the color version.
Yes, right. So, they stand out. The contrast stands out greater in a color version. Yes.
Yes, and it exactly portrays the same kind of anomalies in the Bush picture, doesn't it?
Right. So just so people know what picture we're talking about, this Bush picture is not a picture which the George Bush people ever put out. This photo was one of the 120 photos or so that Otto Skorzeny gave to Eric Berman in a shoebox. And one of them included a photo of George Bush in 1944. He was standing on an aircraft carrier with two other airmen. One of them is Gunner, and the other was his navigator. And because they flew in a type of torpedo plane, it was a Navy torpedo plane called an Avenger, and it had a three-man crew, the pilot, navigator, and gunner. And that photo was taken the day before they went on a was a bombing mission to an island called Ichijima. They're, of course, stationed on an aircraft carrier in the Pacific. And that next day, when they went on the bombing run, George Bush apparently sabotaged the plane himself. They were not under enemy fire at all at the time. The man flying tail gunner in the plane immediately in front of them was no more than 100 yards, not even 100 yards, I believe 100 feet in front of them. He could clearly see George Bush in the cockpit. And what he saw was that the cockpit began to smoke. They were not under enemy fire. You've got to remember this.
I think so that was Chester Mazuski. It was his name. Something right. Like Chester Mazuski.
Right. That's fairly close, right?
Yeah.
And what happened is that after smoke started to come out of the cockpit, George Bush Sr. bails out, but the aircraft itself takes a nosedive, and the two other airmen who he posed on the deck of the aircraft with the previous day died in that plane crash. Now, we came to find out through Otto Skorzeny that Bush, being a Nazi infiltrator, intentionally sabotaged the plane to have it go down because he wanted a German submarine to pick up the plane's wreckage because they wanted to steal some navigation type equipment, bombing sites. I forget what the story was, but there was some technology on that airplane that the Germans wanted.
I think the guns were part of it, too. Yeah, the guns.
I don't know. I can't remember the details, but I do know that a German submarine, in fact, with divers, etc., secured the aircraft, got the aircraft. George Bush himself was rescued by a U.S. Navy sub and taken, back aboard. And, of course, he was hailed as a hero. But as George Matuski says in his article, Bush... Of course, he doesn't accuse Bush of having sabotage because he just sees the smoke. The plane goes down. Bush bails out, and the two other airmen don't have the opportunity to bail out because of their location in the craft. And instead of Bush, if he wanted to try to save the men, he could have tried to land on water. That particular aircraft is capable of landing on water. They probably all three would have survived, but that wasn't his intention. His intention was to have the plane go down, and only he was to survive, because this German sub was waiting to get that plane. So the story we get is that George Bush Sr. is a great war hero. Well, he was no such thing. No more than McCain was a great war hero in the Vietnam War. But on the photo you're referring to, George Bush is standing between these two men. It was a color photo, but the color of that period was really faded out. It's very, washed out colors, which is typical of color, photos of that time. I was cropping George Bush head only and enlarging it because I wanted to use that headshot among many others that I was putting together so we can see if all these photos of George Bush, starting from the photo that began in, the late 30s in Nazi Germany, right up to the latest photos of George Bush Sr., if it's the same man. I was going to do a photo study the same way I did with the Martin Bormann photos and what I plan to do with the Joseph Mengele photos. Just do a head-by-head shot of, maybe 20 or even 30 shots. Just looking at the heads, all about the same size. So that was my original purpose. I had gotten the photo off Eric Berman's website. At the time, I can't even remember whether I already had his CD or not. I did order a CD, but I don't think I even had the CD at the time. He merely posted one of the photos he posted on his website. He had since taken it down, but at that time it was up. So I copied it, and I just did this framing. And when I enlarged the photo, I see to the left of George Bush's head the image of a being, ghost-like image, if you will. I call them etheric beings, etheric images. I don't know what else to call them. But they're some sort of entity that's bleeding through from a higher dimension that we can partially see in the third dimension. And he's right next to his face there.
Wearing a crown and everything. I mean, it's
right, right, right. And as I enlarge the photo and try to enhance the contrast, you know, more detail of this entity, and then there's other entities with, you know, among that, the first face that I discovered. The main face that I discovered is human-like in appearance, a very sad-looking face, a man with very sad, dark eyes. I mean, it's amazing how much sadness is in that entity's face. But there's other creatures there that sort of look like reptilian-type creatures. I'm not exactly sure what they are, but there's more than one entity there. But it's plain as day. Once you enhance the photos and enlarge them, I mean, it's like a painting. It's like a picture. It's amazingly clear. These aren't wispy things that you can barely make out. It's pretty clear. So what we're getting at here, it seems that people who have, I guess we'll have to call them, they seem to be a mix of perhaps human and aliens mixed together. We call them hybrids. And the predominant group tends to be reptilians. So we call them reptilian shapeshifters. So we call George Bush a reptilian shapeshifter because Kathy O'Brien, in her book Transformation of America, says two or three or four places in her book that she witnessed George Bush shapeshift into a reptilian form. She was there in the White House when he was, during the time he was president. She was there as a sex slave, and she saw Bush, for whatever reason, wanted to demonstrate this transformation in front of her. And he did. So now we see that these entities seem to be, you know, close or within the aura, let's say, of these hybrids. Now, we not only see them in the, you know, external to the body, but we also see them in the body. If we make enlargements of certain parts of their body, their head, their hands, their arms, their knees, we see what looks kind of look like a skin blemish almost, but when we zoom in on it and enlarge it, we see etheric entities, lots of them, some of them human-looking, some of them alien-looking, some animal-looking. But tons of these etheric images are embedded, if you will, within the outer body, the aura of these people. And it seems to me that depending on how they're holding their shape, as it were, if they're holding the shape loosely, I believe we see more of these entities manifest. And if they're holding the shape tightly, then we don't see these manifestations. It really depends on the moment that the picture is taken, what the degree of manifestation that there is. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
When I converted one of these pictures, just in a simple manner by changing the color drive of the picture, and you could see the distinct colors in the photo. I mean, you have a what looks like a light gray background becomes a deep tomato red wall.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what looks like a even lighter gray shirt becomes a yellow shirt. And you have these contrasts, so you know that there's pretty much a significant balance or restoration of the color, the original color in the photo.
Yes.
What just for the sake of the listening audience, you saw the entities that you're talking about appear
yes.
in those photos.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
And so it's obvious that the photo was changed to try to mask or hide the fact
right.
that those exist. Now,
right.
people probably think we're crazy right now.
No, when they see the photos, we'll be putting out the photos soon, and I, you know, want to make it clear, and I'll make it clear in my story that it was you who alerted me to the presence of the entities on Barack Obama's body. He's about a 10-year-old boy in this photograph. He's wearing shorts. And he also has a short sleeve shirt. So he's sitting down on a bench next to his mother. The mother's holding a baby girl, and Lolo Sotoro is on the left side of the photo, also sitting on the bench. Anyway, Barack is smiling. He's looking at the camera, and the version that you got off the internet is black and white, as you say, but it was apparently originally colored, but it was desaturated to obscure what looks like odd marks on both Barack's knees and also his hands. So when you go to black and white, these odd appearances to his skin are reduced, and they don't stand out as much. And you obviously accurately figured out that the photo originally was color. I mean, if it was from 1967, was that the year of that photo, or 70?
Say it could have been 67, 68. If they're
okay,
saying
but the point is, color film was common then, right?
71.
I mean, yeah, color film was the most common way to take film during that time. It wasn't as if it was the 40s or the 50s, which black and white was the common. No, color was long since in use. So, as you say, by reinserting the color, then the oddities of his knees, hands, elbows, forearms, even at the size of the original photo, stand out slightly. But through the magic of Photoshop, which allows us to first use a digital photo, encoded photo, we can magnify it. We can magnify it greatly. And once we magnify the image of 10-year-old Barack Obama there, and we look at his knees closely, we look at his forearms, his elbows, my God, there's just entities. There's a lot
galore.
Of entities. There's entities galore, but you're the one who spotted it, so you get full credit and recognition. So what I did, though, is I was able to crop out these entities and really work on the adjusting the contrast so to really bring out these faces, and it's quite a scene. It's an amazing thing to see, and I think it will cause a tremendous amount of reaction when people actually see that they won't believe it. But we'll start with the black and white photo, the very one you started with. We'll go from there, then we'll show the color version, and then we'll start showing the enlargements and the croppings as we go down. You know, we post this story, and people are going to be amazed. So, by the way, just to let you know, Henry Makow did an article a week or two ago, I can't remember exactly, in which the article was about Barack Obama's affiliation and association with a rabbi of the Lubavitch group. I can't even remember the rabbi's name, but Henry used a small shot of Barack Obama standing next to this fellow in the essay. But what I did is that I enlarged the photo. The original photo was rather small, maybe, I'm guessing, you know, 1 inch wide, 1.5 inches high, something like that. But I enlarged it just for the heck of it to look at it. And sure enough, when I cropped out Barack's head and I enlarged it, he's partially shape-shifting there. And when you see the photos, you'll understand why I'm saying that. Because I'm going to compare a photo of him, the publicity photo, that shows his, you know, in good light, strong detail, his head, his forehead, and so forth. And when you see the photo that Makow included with his essay, the enlarged version, you'll see that his forehead is shape-shifting. Some parts, as we know, when we see a reptilian shape-shift, some parts of the head expand outwards so that they form like bumps, okay? And other parts of the head cave inwards so they form like dimples and depressions. And we know from the other screenshots I've made of YouTube video Fox News reporters who were shape-shifting on air, etc.
Yes.
The shape-shifting can be extremely severe, you know, if it's caught on tape. And so it's not a severe shape-shift, but you can see a partial shape-shift.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be obvious to anybody that on photo A, the publicity photo, which he looks perfectly normal, his forehead is smooth. On the photo that I'm going to enlarge, you can see that there is a very clear bump over his right eye, in which there's an outward bubbling, if you will. And then over his left eye, there's a definite indent. It's not a small indent, it's a major indent. So the man cannot change the bones in his forehead, okay? It can't happen. So it's a partial shape-shifting phenomena that Henry, you know, included with this essay, not realizing. So it seems to me that it's really worth it to take the time to scour the Internet to find photos of Barack Obama, because that man here or there is shape-shifting.
Well, you know, when you're looking at videotape, if you freeze frame, you can move with the proper playback machine. You can go one frame at a time, and you can catch that in the same manner. And it's not a distortion of the film.
Oh,
that's the important thing.
That's the important part, because I've had somebody say this before when I put up a piece of yours half an ago. They were saying that it's not distortion, because the surrounding area in the shot, you know, the background, the stuff adjacent to the party, that's not changing color or shape at all. It's only the face of the shapeshifter that's changing. I mean, those arguments have no merit whatsoever. The whole photo would be distorting if it was distortion, not just the man's face.
Now, when we looked at this black and white photo that we're talking about, and you look at Lolo Satoru's arms, it looks like you're seeing the anomalies of shadowing and the light hitting the arm. Yet when it goes to color, it looks like he just got out of a cosmic tattoo artist shop.
Okay, I see.
You know, we saw the two different faces on his forearms.
Yes.
One is a being that's got a long beard, almost like a wizard, and the other, his left arm, has something that has a triple chin on it. It looks like something, I don't know, like a caricature of Humpty Dumpty after he fell off the wall. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, it is hard to describe, because as we've noted privately and talking on the phone about this, in most cases, etheric images blend into another. So it's not like it's a clear frame. Well, in some cases, there are clear frames, like the UFO nighttime photo. It's amazing how they're all in their own square little frame there. But in these etheric images we get off the body shape itself, faces, images tend to blend within each other. And it's, so you can, depending on how you look at it or how you adjust your mind's eye, you can look at it one way and say, oh, yes, I see that face. And then you look at it another way and, oh, I see that face there. It's remarkable how these things work. Of course, this is all brand new stuff. The idea of finding these etheric faces in transmuted chemtrail clouds and sylphs in these photos of reptilian shapeshifters, I mean, this is just all remarkable stuff. It's just amazing.
Well, it's proof that there is an awareness of the spiritual realms that's been manifesting itself on this planet for thousands of years, and now we have the technology to see it.
To see it, right.
Not just feel it, you know. I began this search, Ken, merely just to substantiate who this guy was. Where did he come from? How did he rise to this position of prominence? Well, it's a media creation more than anything. I mean, he's getting as much exposure as McDonald's. Okay, so, pretty soon they're going to have some kind of Barack Obama sandwich or stew at one of these fast food places, you know, just because they built his name up. But the things that we're finding go hand in hand with all the other ways that you can connect these people to these secret societies and these secret bloodlines. The same patterns are there.
Yeah, it's the same pattern. This is
exact connections are there.
Yeah, right. That's what makes it essentially, once you've educated yourself to the point that you see the pattern, then they do repeat the same pattern. So they make it easy for us. They're not that creative, let's say. And they do use the same patterns of obfuscation, of hiding the truth, of covering up births, covering up deaths, or faking births and deaths, etc. It's we're seeing the same pattern, right?
And they're erroneously assuming that everyone is dumbed down. They're mistakenly assuming that we're all dumbed down and we can't figure out what's going on.
That we don't
have discernment. That we can't read into what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of like playing a chess game. They're inviting us to chess. Most people are playing checkers, as Chris Hinckley, our good friend, likes to say on his radio show. But in reality, when you're playing chess, you think 10 moves ahead. And, maybe they're thinking 13 ahead because they like the number 13 so well. But it's quite obvious what's going on here. And the truth is the truth. It's as difficult as it is for someone to handle that, to grasp that, to try to comprehend. We're not asking anyone to believe this. This can be seen.
Take the time to, read the material, read your story, and look at the photos, and it's right there. It's pretty convincing if you just invest the time to actually read it and take off the. The thing is that brainwashing is a ongoing daily process in which, as you've said often in many shows you've done, it's when you continuously repeat a notion, and particularly when people's minds are on idle. We very often watch TV.
American Idol.
There's a lot of stuff. There might be a lot of stuff going on in the room. You might have kids, and you're talking to the wife, and she's yelling. So it's kind of a partial focusing on whatever you're hearing on TV. Let's say it's the news, or let's say it's a political program. They're talking about the Democratic National Convention coverage or the Republican Convention, etc. We have the radio on, we have the TV on, and when all the media sources, all the mainstream media sources, repeat the same notion, most people unthinkingly absorb the information, and that's the whole point of repeating it over and over again. You absorb it and you begin to accept it as being true and accurate because you've heard it so often, but you just don't remember all the places you've heard it. You just recall that you've heard it often.
That's the subconscious through the subliminal programming.
Subliminal program, right. That's the point I want to make, because I've seen it just recently. I was doing some searching on the Internet. I've seen this this phenomena when it comes to Ted Gundersen's, reputation on the Internet. Now, I've been a defender of ex-FBI Ted Gundersen since about 1995 on the Internet, because Ted himself cannot type. He didn't even know how to get email. He was not computer savvy at all. But yet, because he had been doing a lot of work for many years at conferences and talks, etc., to expose child kidnapping, the government's use of children in slavery and pornography, etc. He's exposing Satanism, particularly with high government officials, they wanted to put him out of the business. And particularly in 1999, he was helping Bryce Taylor at the conferences that she was doing. He arranged for security for her as well. He was co-hosting talks with her, and he was there because she was frightened to go to these conferences alone. So Ted was there with her all the way, and arranged bodyguards in the whole nine yards. Well, I think 1999 was the year that the Illuminati, FBI, whoever, decided, you know, we've really got to shut Ted Gunderson down. He's just gaining too much ground here, and he's talking to too many people. So they had a game plan to make him look bad. So they used, you know, people who are mind controlled. Barbara Hartwell, it's a woman named Virginia McCulloch. There's a group of people who, let's say, are used by intelligence groups to spread propaganda and disinformation. They started to, you know, to smear Ted Gunderson's name in sundry articles in many ways. Okay, I spent you know, a number of I wrote a number of articles, I should say, defending Ted against these smears. It really started in April of 2000. It started with a statements which Art Bell, radio show Art Bell, made over the air about Ted Gunderson and another named David Hingston. And starting from that point forward, the smear campaign for Ted really took off. And I have noticed now, this is, you know, 2008, when I go to blogs that talk about Ted Gunderson, I see a lot of people have inculcated the negative, the smear information that was started in that effort around 2000 or so. Now, I wrote a fair amount of defensive rebuttal material to that hopefully whoever read it, I have gotten a lot of nice feedback email. They said that, you know, until I read your article rebutting this, I did suspect Ted was dirty, but after I saw what you had to say, I can see how he was, you know, really being smeared, and that, you know, thank you for defending him, blah, blah, blah. However, though, that's a smaller minority. The majority of people, like when I get onto these blogs, and they have something to say about Ted Gunderson, it's usually either strongly negative or moderately negative. And I know how that came about. Because of the volume of lies and disinformation put out by Ted Gunderson's smear team. That includes, a guy named Stu Webb, who has his own website, who has tons of material up there, a lot of it devoted to smearing Ted Gunderson. But Barbara Hartwell has worked very hard at smearing Ted, Virginia McCulloch, a former live-in girlfriend of Ted, who was a parent of one of the McMartin School children, who, you know, became lovers with Ted Gunderson for about 4 years. She also, you know, turned on Ted, and she was drawn into this smear team. So I can see how the cumulative effect of all these articles painting Ted as a bad guy have on the general public, and it's that they're suspicious of him. And I can tell you that I don't defend anybody if I had any inkling that they're an agent or they're working on the dark side. I think I'm reasonably competent in determining who's okay and who's not. And I've looked at Ted very closely, and I'm telling you, he's an okay guy. And these smear tactics against him are government-driven. What I mean by that, FBI, CIA, etc. Because Ted Gunderson's reputation, he had risen too high in the ranks of the FBI. He was the FBI bureau chief in three different cities, in New Haven, in Dallas, and his last bureau chief position was Los Angeles. He retired out of Los Angeles. He had over 880 men, I think, working under him. I don't know how huge the budget was, but, you know, Ted Gunderson was a big deal in the FBI. He just wasn't your routine agent. He was way up there. Now, this guy, once he retires in 1979, starts doing talks, and he's seeing that, you know, there's this, the government's got all these secret operations going on that are involving children, kidnapping children, the finders, and he's finding Satanism, and he's rescuing people who are, Paul Bonacci, the whole Nebraska cover-up story. John DeCamp unearthed that story in the late 80s, early 90s, wrote a book about it.
The Franklin cover-up you're talking about.
Franklin cover-up, right. So, yeah. Ted Gundersen really nationalized the McMartin school case. This case was in the newspaper for 10 years. It ran from, just about 10
yeah.
years at time. Now, it's true, it's the parents of the children who first tried to uncover the story. McMartin was a school in Hermosa Beach, California, a preschool, I should say, for young preschool kids. And they were something like 430-some-odd children over a period of a few years were sexually abused by pedophiles, elite Illuminati pedophiles. They were sneaking these kids out of the school. They were taking them, flying them in jets to some location where they were abused. They witnessed satanic rituals. Babies were murdered. I mean, these kids went through a lot of horrific stuff.
They even had tunnels under the school, which the investigators wouldn't excavate during the trial, but afterwards Ted even foot the bill to have that done. And
right. This is the point I'm making up. Ted found out about the story. Yes, the parents were the first one trying to find evidence, but Ted came in there with a lot more professionalism and a lot more savoir-faire and a lot more connections than the parents had, and he got things really moving. And he put up $17,000 of his own money to pay for the equipment to dig those tunnels. The parents didn't come up with that money. Ted Gundersen did. So he rightly deserves the lion's share of credit, if you will, for unearthing the McMartin story. But when you listen to one of his smear artists like Jackie McGauley, she'll tell a completely opposite tale. According to her, it was her and other parents who did this, and Ted just played this kind of minor hanger-on role who was attempting to gather credit, laurels to himself, when in fact the parents did it all. Not true at all. The woman just tells a lot of things that are either total falsehoods or gross distortions of the reality. But they promote a lot of writings on a lot of blogs, a lot of essays are posted all over the internet. That's what the majority of people tend to read. And so they come away with this notion that Ted Gundersen is dirty. And I still see this today. I was just on a blog a couple days ago, and I still see the same blogger buzz that, Ted's, quote, known to be dirty. It's not true at all. It's a complete, total fabrication of the people who intentionally set out to smear him. So what I'm getting at here is that the cumulative effect of repeating lies is that the majority of people accept the lies as fact. And that's the mm-hmm. purpose of repeating propaganda and information, disinformation over and over again.
And if they never hear the truth whatsoever, what else do they have to go on but the lies?
That's what they go on. That's how they quote form their opinions, because their opinions have been shaped for them and bombarded right into their subconscious, and they don't even realize how it was done.
Yeah. Well, in our closing moments here, because we are running out of time here. And
yes,
Seth is going to have to go home. He's done a great job. The sound's been great tonight. And it helps when the NSA stays away because...
apparently I mustn't rank much because we're not having NSA orchestrated dropouts here.
Well, I'm really interested in what we have to say tonight, too. So.
Right. But anyway, I just wanted to mention to you just 1 second is that the show you did with the ex police officer the other night, a 58-year-old man,
Greg Evenson.
Oh, that was a great show. I mean, we have to talk about that more. He did a great job.
Oh, he's excellent.
Very important.
I've been on his show a couple of times, and He has a show on Republic Broadcasting Network on Saturday afternoon, and he's a brilliant man. Number one, see, he comes from the law enforcement background when police officers were called peace officers.
Correct.
And he's always thought of himself as such. He's a brilliant researcher. He's got connections in high places to find out what's going on, and he's just a great person.
Yeah.
He's a man of truth, and that's what the show is about, is showing things that people aren't going to get from the mainstream. This is not propaganda. This is what we discover when we're out looking for the truth. And you do that very well yourself. So, but I'm glad. I'll let him know the next time I talk to him that you.
I plan to talk with him. He makes the case very, very well done. And we have to get people like him to be heard by policemen from one end of this country to the other, because we can stop the New World Order if those in the military and those in the police would simply not cooperate with it.
Mm-hmm.
Stop it cold in its tracks.
Well, I think there's a point where some of the law enforcement people that they've tried to put under their umbrella of strong-armed power to quell any outrage or disruption of their plans from the mainstream masses is crumbling apart in a way. There's a lot going on in the universe that's affecting this planet and the consciousness of the average Joe.
Yeah.
I'm never ceasing to be amazed at the amount of email I get from people that read not just my research, but the general research that's out there, and people are starting to get the picture that something's not right. Now, those police officers that they're counting on carrying out their plans are waking up. Wait a minute, I'm not going to do this to my family. I'm not going to do this to my community. There's no reason to do this. This is not a reality around here. Only a sadistic, satanic mind could conjure something like this up, and if it's going to be between money and my family, I'm going to pick my family first. Most people who are sincere and really discerning what's going on are going to come to that same conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
We can make money out of thin air too.
Yep.
Why not?
Right.
I mean that's literally what they're doing. This money has no particular value to
it
whatsoever.
Yeah, they're just printing it, right? It's just worth paper and ink. That's all there is.
I mean, we could use Monopoly money. Just about everybody's got a Monopoly game.
Right.
So, Milton Bradley made a fortune off of that, didn't they?
Yes, that's right.
So, in closing here, you haven't seen the second half of this article, but I can tell you.
No, I know. I'm looking for, that's going to be a blockbuster too. I mean, the first half is a lot, but I know the really juicy stuff is coming in the second half. So.
Yeah. So, this is, as I state very upfront in the article, this is going to be difficult for some people to grasp, because they, for a variety of reasons, which you so succinctly pointed out at the top of the first hour, people are, they want someone to come and save them. You know, they've been indoctrinated into a savior. Whether it's Zorro or Captain Kangaroo or Mr. Rogers or Superman, they don't care who it is, just so someone comes and saves them. And we're at a point where that's not going to happen on as high a vibration as we would like unless we do something ourselves.
Yeah.
We've got to awaken. This is what this is all about. This is to bring this information to the public and say, wait a minute, so there's a story here, and it's not what it seems, and let me show you, if you just do a little digging, what you can find out. And it led me in directions I didn't even expect to go, but I'm not surprised.
Oh, yes, I know. That's how it always is. You're right. When you start a hunt like this, it's amazing what you come upon. You didn't expect it. Like that photo I mentioned, George Bush, I never imagined that I would find that entity in that photo. I just wasn't looking for it, but there it was once you enlarge the photo. So you're kind of enlarging, you're putting a microscope on things and making it easier to see. So things show up when you magnify them.
Yeah, that's true. Well, this is the mindset that we would hope the listening audience has, is that they won't take things as they're dished out to us as the gospel truth. Now, I'm not asking anyone to believe. Neither one of us have asked people to believe what we're saying, but we're describing similar phenomenon. And you mentioned one particular author, Fritz Springmeier, in going back. And I think I pointed this out to you within the past week, that after all of this research was done, after the article was formulated and basically assembled for presentation, you know, after the connecting of the dots, and this is how someone can follow this sort of in a chronological manner as close as possible, I've sort of made the comment I didn't expect to find these things, but it's so much like everything else, and we can really see all the answers to what's going on in this.
Yeah.
It just it reveals everything, what the game really is.
Right.
The least favorite people amongst the public are politicians and lawyers, and they happen to both have primarily or predominantly the same vocation. They usually come out of law and go into politics because that gives them the opportunity to create the laws. And somehow they have this special dispensation to be above the law.
Yes.
And no one should be above the law,
that's
least
right.
of all above God.
Right.
Any closing thoughts on this? What you anticipate? And
well, I think you're sort of alluding to what my website is about. I call it Educate Yourself because people need to realize that you gain far more in life when you take control of your life and not allow others to lead you and to control you. And we're in America particularly, we've become acclimated to letting others represent us, control us, and we probably don't think of it as control, but that's what it is. And if you're not running your life, someone else is, and it's usually a politician who's in it for his own gain at your expense. So we're coming to, you know, that boil is coming to a head now. We can see how that they're destroying the economy of the country, but this Freddie Mac bailouts and the Bear Stearns bailouts and so forth, this is a plan. They're following a plan. They want to destroy the economy because their goal is to destroy the United States. So that's why you want to go to educate-yourself.org and read some of the articles that I have up there on the current news page and on the New World Order, etc., to see how and why they're doing it. And by listening to radio programs like yours, we can see that it is possible to do something about it. But first you have to know what the game is. You have to know and take the blinders off and forget about all these romantic, particularly young people. They, just like I did when I was younger, you get starry-eyed notions because of the media about who Jimmy Carter was. I mean, he's still a nice guy in my opinion, but he's an Illuminati nice guy. You know, he's a picked guy and he's a controlled person. And I'm sorry to say, John Kennedy comes from an Illuminati family. The Kennedys is one of the 13 Illuminati families, and he was a nice guy, and he was a playboy and all that. But still, I destiny. He was killed because he wasn't playing ball to the degree that the Illuminati expected him to play ball. He just had this notion that he was going to take apart the CIA, and he was going to reveal the information about the aliens to the public, and he wanted to print silver certificates backed by, you know, we can't have that with the Illuminati. Not if you come from an Illuminati family. You can't actually believe you're the president just because they're calling you the president.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Illuminati who's controlling the country, not you. And so they had to blow his brains out in a very dramatic way to put everyone else on notice that this is what happens to you when you cross us. And those are the very words that Frank Sinatra said to Bryce Taylor, and she reports it in her book. When you know, and supposedly Frank Sinatra was, you know, at least if you look at the media, supposed to have been a great admirer and friend of John Kennedy. Well, he was when it served Frank's purpose, but when it came to Kennedy being killed, Frank Sinatra had no qualms about talking down about him and telling Bryce that this is what you happen when, you know, this is what happens to you when you cross us, you know. You get it. It's just terrible. I just saw another special on TV talking about Frank Sinatra. A great singer, but not really the wonderful guy that they portray him to be. You know, kind of a dark dude there.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I
well,
should end it there.
Ken, we're actually out of time now, so
yeah.
I want to thank you for being on the show. And I guess you're coming up, what is it, on the 29th again, we're going to have you. So
yeah, I look forward to these talks. I mean, there's an unending number of topics that we can explore. And I'd like to talk about James Casbolt on the next show.
Yeah, that's some pretty interesting information there. For anybody that wants to catch up, Ken just posted 5 chapters of a book that Casbolt is writing, former MI6 intelligence agent and mind control, what do you say, victim or operative?
Well, I victim, of course, but very high up, though, in the British end of the Illuminati. He comes from a long family line of, let's say, servants to the British or the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
High Masons and all that, so just unbelievable revelations. Just it will blow your mind when you read this, what this man has to say.
Mm-hmm.
He just came out 2 years ago. He just showed up. Well, actually, it was late 2006 where he just began to come out. Began to break his mind control programming 2 years ago. And he made his appearance on the internet in 2007, but of course he was besieged by a lot of blogger critics who were, you know, just instantly jumped down his throat. Mm-hmm. I claim the right about that, but he has fabulous information. His information is just fabulous.
So, yeah, he was on a network that I was on back. I think it was as far back as May of 2006.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he was on. It was either the week after or 2 weeks afterward. It was regarding the Hannah Billups abduction case that I was on this particular network.
Okay, well, that must have been at the very beginning, because I know he started to, you know, recover memories in 2006.
So. Yeah.
But it's important that people know just how far advanced the game is, and by reading Casbolt's chapters from his books, which is posted on my current news page, they'll at least get a better idea of just how far along the game is in England. It's very advanced. It's very advanced.
Well, maybe that's a topic for the next show, but we do have to go now. So
okay.
So I want to thank you for being on the show again. Ken's website is educate-yourself.org, or for those of you who don't know what a hyphen is, educate-yourself.org. Those of you who don't know what a dash is, educate-yourself.org. Is there any other way?
It's going to work some way. Yeah. Okay. Okay,
Ken, great having you on the show. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and Ken Adachi will be back with us on the 29th of September. If you enjoyed tonight's show, be sure to check out the archives. Also, visit my website, directlightproductions.com. Click on articles. Check out the new Obama piece. The second half of that piece hopefully will be up tomorrow. I'm just waiting on some editorial signs from my publisher at the Idaho Observer. Also, you can subscribe to the Idaho Observer by calling 1-208-255-2307. Speak to Don or Ingrid. They'll be happy to sign you up for a subscription. Now, it's a monthly paper, and it's filled with the truth. So I encourage you to get a subscription. You can also read that, again, on my website or at idaho-observer.com. And now, mine's up. Theirs is not up yet. Probably won't be for a week. So, again, go to directlightproductions.com. Special thanks to the listening audience as well as Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth, for the sound, it was great tonight. Seth, thank you. And to the listening audience, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.